Welcome again to our studio. Year is around.
Thank you.
Secrets of something is finished. Something is about to come. You are about to go for the holidays. Where are you going?
I'm going to France.
Any particular reason?
I love France.
You love France.
That's enough reason. I simply love France. I'm going to just have a wonderful time and be happy. And actually, you're right. It is an ending, and there will be a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the mother's questions and answers, we just finished the whole year of 1955.
Yes, we did that, and we did some of Savitri.
We got through all of book one and the first three cantos of book two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a natural ending, because after this, Sri Aurobindo was going to plunge into the vital with all kinds of strange things.
That's plunging into the vital awaits us next year, right?
yes, again.
It's going to take a full year to do that, no?
It's going to take a long time. Book two is a big book in Savitri. And it's the book that he wrote last, because it's the story of his own sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it was toward the end of his life when he'd really accomplished all these things that he
wrote. How long did it take him to write the whole Savitri?
He started in 1916, and he wasn't finished when he left the body in 1950.
So who finished?
It's never been finished in that sense. There are some books that never got worked on again, especially the Book of Death. And people speculate, and it's all speculation because we don't know, that he hadn't gone through death yet. So
he didn't know.
but I always thought that Sri Aurobindo had one foot on this side of the fence and one foot on that side of the fence. I did an exhibit once called Sri Aurobindo Mahasamadhi with all these photos of Sri Aurobindo Mahasamadhi. And I started doing research to find things that he'd written, and I'm absolutely sure that his consciousness was on both sides, life and death, all the time. But he didn't write much, really, about dying. He wrote a huge lot about living.
That's a process when I think we finally realize when we are in it.
Yes, for this lifetime.
One can speculate until you go through, you don't really know how it does look like. And when you see it, you might be surprised.
I expect to be very surprised, actually. I mean, especially because of everything that the mother writes about it in the agenda. Finally, after all the years of the agenda, she sort of ends up by saying anything could happen.
True.
But, you know, we have in Oroville the most wonderful place. This farewell room.
Oh, you mean like that? Well, I have to tell you, I know for a few more. Probably how you focus it. And most of the people do like to be departed dignifying way, you know. So most of farewell facilities are nice places.
This one is a little bit different.
In which sense?
Well, Mother wrote, or actually spoke to Satprem in the agenda, she complained that the Indian people burn the bodies too fast. And she said that it actually takes a full 7 days for the final part of the person to completely leave the physical body.
It takes some time, yeah.
It's called the spirit of the form. And she said it was very well known in Egypt.
So they had 40 days, not only 7, as far as I know.
I don't
know. The Tibetan book of that, it says about 40 days.
40?
Yes.
Okay. That may not be what's left inside the physical body. That may be what's in the Earth atmosphere.
The rest, yeah.
But I don't think there's any rule about that. I mean, from the experiences that Mother speaks about in the agenda, from time to time she talks about somebody passing on in the ashram, and their whole consciousness coming into her and staying there.
Yeah, I had similar experiences, actually, kind of joyful. But it's a special moment when you can receive, and then what to do with it? Are you aware of it? I mean, I know the feeling, because the people close to you, usually you have this transfer of huge amount of energy of whatever the conscious of the person was.
Yes,
and
you're
in
right.
many cases it's also because if there are many children or grandchildren, it can be divided.
I think that the same door opens when someone is born and when someone dies.
Mm.
Whatever the door is to whatever land is on the other side, I can't say. But my feeling that my experience is the same door. And Mother speaks about that.
Mm.
She says, but this is very funny. She says, here you are, you have someone in your life that you love very much. You don't want them to die. Then they die, and they come to you, and you say, go away, go away. I don't want you. And you stop and think about that, and you realize what a stupid superstition, the fear that is in people.
What fear? Sorry, I'm lost.
Well, okay, when Mother, I'm just going to quote her again. She says, when the person dies and their whole being and their personality like comes into your space and into your consciousness, mm-hmm. you panic. And you say, go away, go away. What a dumb thing. It's only superstition. Just because the body is not walking around with the consciousness in it, you can't accept their consciousness coming into you.
I didn't have a problem with that.
You didn't, but apparently it's common because she mentions it. That's the only reason.
It is?
Yeah, that's what she said.
To me, it was fun because you can at least I can talk with them.
I agree with. So I don't think it's just 40 days. I think people have things to do before they go, and it's different for everyone.
Man, but we are talking about the death. Come on, what about life? It's like I'm ready. I'm not really ready yet. I have some things to do. I will embrace it with joy because I know how it looks like. It's super fun. But well, it's also boring, so...
We're not talking about our death. We're talking about other people's death.
Like,
just to say, because this place in Orville is to keep the people's bodies for the 7 days. And I've been doing some work there.
Mm.
And I'm just really impressed with what a wonderful job they've done to create this atmosphere. Not just a place anywhere in the world where you feel comforted when your loved one passes on, but a place that really has Mother's vibration very, very strongly.
Mm-hmm. How many people work there now?
That I don't know. There are two principal people, and then they have also a team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just involved in kind of decorating the place a little bit, Mother's photo and things like that.
Cool, huh?
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
I'm thinking about that. It's been a full moon, an intensive one, and lots of people died.
It's funny, they go in groups. They do, they go in groups.
I didn't
do it that way. I chose the original one of 1955 because I started with the first recording. The questions and answers started years before that, actually. Mother had a group of little girls that used to come to her room. I think there were 6 or 8 of them. And it started because everybody in the ashram was supposed to work. That's the way the yoga was.
Mm-hmm.
And this group of little girls went to one of the people who give out the work and said they wanted to work. Mm-hmm. And they told the mother, and the mother said, okay. And there's nothing, they were too young to do anything. They can clean my rooms, she said.
Mm-hmm.
And so they it's in someone's memoirs, they write about it. Mother made little dusters for them and special little brooms, and they would go and at appointed times, and they would clean the mother's rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then she began relating to them and talking to them and playing games with them. And then she actually started a little class mm-hmm. with them in French.
How long she was going with the classes? Since 1955 to...
I think she started in 51. I'm mm-hmm. not actually... clear, but I think it was about 51. And I think she went until 58. Mm-hmm. And she stopped finally because the kids weren't asking questions anymore. And she finally said, okay, there has to be from both sides. Mm-hmm. It has to be from both sides. And because she didn't lecture, she answered questions. Mm-hmm.
But how, I mean, it was the same group of the children. I would imagine that there would be these children would be keep changing, no?
No, it wasn't like that. These girls were all of a kind of similar age, and they were in what they called the green group in the ashram playground. That was, a certain age. By the time we start hearing them speak on the tape, 55, they're 13, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. And so they go all the way through. We see them we hear in their voices kind of growing up as the years go by. But what happened was it was in a small room somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then other classes wanted to come. And then other classes wanted to come. And pretty soon it was all the classes. And then, of course, everyone in the ashram wanted to be wherever the mother was. So it ended up being out in the playground. Mm-hmm. And there are photographs of mother sitting in front of the map of India, and the students right in front of her, and then people standing around everywhere. But the only people who could ask questions was the green group. Because it was their class. It's interesting that she did that. It didn't become the class for what by then was hundreds and hundreds of people sitting. It was really focused. And it's funny because these children are the ones that stayed on and are now running the ashram. I know some of them. One of them is the managing trustee of the ashram. One of them is the principal of the higher course. One of them is in charge of the mother's room upstairs, like that. Mm-hmm. We're starting with 1956. Mm-hmm. And 1956 was the year of the supramental realization. So everything shifts. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, people come along with questions about the supramental realization, which nobody had before. And it becomes really interesting.
Well, I can imagine.
I mean, there's one class where she actually comes in, the class is very short, and she says, I've received all these questions, written questions, and maybe by then it's open to other people than the green group, that they could write a question to her, I don't know. But anyway, she says, I'm not going to answer them. You guys are going to have to go inside and get the answers yourself, and then tell me what you saw, and I'll tell you if it's true.
But they did it?
I'm not sure because I don't remember. It's been years since I read that, and I'm not prepared on the classes yet. But we'll find out.
By the next year, you'll be ready.
We'll find out. But it's helped me tremendously to do this because I have to understand what I'm reading in order to read it out loud to somebody else.
For sure, yeah.
And when I was reading it to myself, I didn't understand it really because if I was tired and I didn't focus on a sentence or I skipped over words or I got part of it, I certainly never had the very clear understanding that I have now, and it's helped me a lot.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine when you're speaking out loud, some things they become obvious. When it's maybe not being clear when you're just reading it.
That's right. That's right.
What is the feedback of the recordings we did this year and the previous ones?
I get from time to time an email thanking me. Mm-hmm. I have one person who tells me that she will listen to some of them two or three times to understand them. And then I have people telling me they really prefer to hear it. Instead of read it, that it helps them. I've had times where I've called friends on the phone and they said, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm listening to you." that's kind of nice.
Yes, it is.
It's been really positive. I think I I seem to remember the radio getting an email from an Indian boy somewhere in another state saying how happy he was that they were broadcasting Mother and Sri Aurobindo.
True. Yeah, it's if you look at the ratings, the whatever it comes to the mother, to the path, spirituality, and Sri Aurobindo, it's highly rated, yeah.
I'm glad.
Because Aurobindo is still a special place, yeah.
I'm glad. I mean, that just to be in that vibration after I've read, like after I do a broadcast, I'm like up in the heavens for half an hour. I just feel so wonderful. Put me in Oroville.
Since the beginning.
I came just to visit,
mm-hmm.
and I was fortunate because I had sent a postcard about some experience I'd had, and so they had my postcard, and they immediately gave me Mother's darshan. And I saw Mother in her room, and the next day I was living in Oroville with a room. And I can't quite remember how I packed and got here, but that's what happened. And then Mother told me I should fix the kitchen and the matrimonial orders came.
So you met the mother? You met the mother only once, or you met her also afterward?
I met her several times.
Mm.
When I came, I had already been living in India for 3 years up in the Himalayas in a primitive ashram. And I had somehow changed in a way that I understood very deeply what was a guru. And I accepted the mother as my guru, and so my whole life was focused on her, whatever I did, all the time. And I wanted to come and see her in her room. I wanted to. It was really important to me.
Hmm.
So I sort of decided that in between every public darshan, I wanted to go once to Mother's room. And I'd sort of wait and feel when I was ready, whatever I thought I was doing yoga 45 years ago, God knows, you know, after a while you see that what you thought was doing yoga was nothing compared to what you have to do with the present moment. But anyway, what I thought I was doing yoga, I would write to her. And she was really nice to me. Every time I asked to come and see her, she always let me come.
So what did you talk with her about?
Well, we didn't, except for the first day when we exchanged a few words. We didn't, because by then, the work that she did, the reason one went to the mother was to receive something for one's progress, to get that light, that bliss, that thing that just carried you into some other world where everything was wonderful and perfect and beautiful. And she would do that quite instantly.
How
with
did you
her
do
consciousness.
That? For somebody who doesn't know about nothing.
It has something to do with identification. They talked a lot about knowledge by identification, that's how we should know things.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a
You mean intuitive knowledge?
And no, intuition is something else. Intuition is actually a very high state. When one is really in intuition, then one is really connected with whatever it is, and there's a truth. But it's like a sort of process. You identify yourself with, let's say it's another person and you're having a conversation, and you don't really get what they're saying. If you can make a kind of movement within and identify yourself, then the knowledge comes. Or with a process, with a thing. They talk about that a lot. And so I think Mother, whose consciousness, she was realized in everything and on all the planes of the being. And she writes in the agenda, really knowing people when they come in front of her, she can really see them. That either consciously she makes some adjustment in their vital or their mental or something, or it's automatic with the vastness of her consciousness acting. But that's why she came. It was a great day for me some years ago when I suddenly realized that Mother and Sri Aurobindo came and did only one thing and talked about one thing, whatever they said in all savitri and all the questions and answers. And that was, the new consciousness is coming and we have to receive it. That will make things work. And all the books, the letters on yoga, the synthesis of yoga, the agenda, all points towards making the whole creation move forward in the new consciousness that they carried.
The revolutionary leap, yeah. But you have the feeling that that's really happened?
No question about that. I have absolutely no question. The difficult thing is it's not... We're stuck in the middle of it, and so we can't see it. Each one of us is fighting our own battles with our own consciousness. I mean, I meet myself around every corner, and after 45 years, it's very much physical. Mm. My muscles, the storehouse in this, whatever this collection is that's me, has retained so much junk from the universal movement, from the ancestry, from my life and how I've struggled to live it. And that clouds everything. So we can't see very well. But I can give you a very good example. Back in the beginning of the 2000s, I spent a fair amount of time in the having lunch in our visitor center. And I'd meet young people from all over the world coming. And the things that they would talk about that was obviously part of their consciousness, that they were born with that knowledge, were things that we struggled so hard to get to.
Like what?
I can't think of any particular example, but they were conscious of the ways people were. They had understandings about the world that we take for granted now that we have, that we did not have 45 years ago, 40 years ago, 35 years ago.
But not the thing is connected with someone's personal growth, so to speak, because I read somewhere that 40 years ago, even 30 years ago, people were born with two strands of DNA activated. In comparison, Guru, with his work and the way of living, thus can reach 36 strands DNA activated.
Wow.
And the kids who were born in like indigo children, which means late 80s, and crystal, which are 2000 and up, they're already born with 12 strands DNA activates. So what? That means they give you insight to, as you're saying, they already know the things. And if I look at them, especially those after 2000, somehow the truth, the justice, equality, humanity is more important to them, and they don't stand for compromises.
You have answered your own question, Miriam.
Thank you.
It's clearly going on. It is. It's the problem is
but
the.
I don't see that connected with Supermanta. Sorry, but I don't.
Well, the supermind is an all-containing consciousness. That's what it is.
No.
Some little drops of an all-containing consciousness manage to get in us and we expand to more, we are getting a little bit of it.
No, I mean, until I started reading the Mother, I didn't see that as somebody descending a supermental. I just saw it as an evolutionary leap, you know, because the things do come in spiral circling. It's like take some time before the quality, it's a quantity between the change to quality leap, yeah? And I think it's happening since the beginning, probably.
Yes.
I didn't connect that with the descent of the supermind.
The supermind is the thing that all saints and sages have aspired for since the beginning of time. It's the total consciousness of all consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is that it's more accessible now to more people. But that's easy to say. When you look at I don't know, even if one looks at one's own particular consciousness and sees how far one is from living in total bliss, you know, and total truth and total consciousness, it tells you how where the evolution is today at this moment. And what Mother and Sri Aurobindo are is an open window on the future that's pouring in. But also, it's not really a descent. Although they talk about descents, at one point Mother says the word descent isn't even really great. And she says one thing must be in the very late 60s or early 70s that she has this experience that she's a pipe, just a conduit, and the force
is
coming into her, and she has a full experience and spreading out, but she says it's not like it's pouring down from a particular place in a stream. She says, I'm floating in it. I'm immersed in it everywhere. But then it goes out from me and it goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And she also says that, and this gets into Sri Aurobindo's definition of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in his little book, The Mother. And she is the embodiment of the new consciousness itself. And her job is, if anyone's ready, then the new consciousness has to come to them. She has no choice.
You said if one is ready. That's a good sentence and good point.
I think doing the yoga helps. Anyway, the world is going to get ready. It will take nature's common round of ages if we are in a development where we have a kind of ignorance about enjoying our life. Mm-hmm. And we do it in such a way that we constantly cloud our consciousness. I think we can enjoy, but I think there are actually ways, better ways and worser ways.
Physical feeling, or you know, like, what was your impression of her?
Physically, on the gross physical level, the only time I have a real memory of that is the first time I saw her.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to Mother and knowing a little bit about her, having read one of her books, and I had this imagination about what she looked like. And she was already 94, but I didn't know that. And I saw this lovely, tall, supple, gracious lady, beautiful, in a long white dress, you know. And when I went to see her the first time, you go in a line of people because people just didn't have to see her very long. And they'd come in front of her, and they'd kneel, and they'd look in her eyes, and she'd do her work. So I went into the room. They called my name. Everyone sat outside on the terrace, and I went in the door. And Mother was sitting in full profile, because people came, just like in Darshan, if you go to Mother's room in Darshan, that's exactly where she sat. Mm-hmm. Her chair was exactly where we saw her. So I saw, with my physical eyes, this very tiny, little, very, very, very old lady sitting with her head bent forward, you know, her back was bent very much. And by then I'm sure I was like totally stoned out with the force, but I didn't know what to do. I was like, I was like struck. I mean, where was my dream, you know? And I didn't know where I was and I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I was like completely blown out. And all I could do was concentrate on watching the people ahead of me in the line to understand what they did so I didn't make a fool of myself. And so I followed the line, like really concentrating, holding on really tight. And then I came and what everyone did is they kneeled down in front of Mother, and that's what you always did, and you looked up into her face. And then they put their head on her lap and she blessed them with her hand. So when I did that, and I kneeled down, and I looked up into Mother's face, she was the youngest person. She was like younger than a new baby. You couldn't explain it. Her skin was so fresh and her eyes were so clear, and she was just so, she was made of light.
Okay, I understand.
That, I, you know, and that's the enduring memory I have of Mother, is that she was made of light, because after that, I think I was in her room 4 times. She passed on in the following year, so it was not a long time, but it was always, I was entering into some kind of light, and it just uplifted me. I was always in bliss for days. And the first time I saw her, well, it was pretty funny, because after what exchange we had, they kept telling me, I couldn't move, I didn't know what was, I was so affected. The attendants behind her kept saying, put your head on Mother's lap, put your head on Mother's lap. So I put my head on Mother's lap, and she blessed me. And then that was it. I wasn't ever going to move. Hmm. I wasn't going to get up. I wasn't ever going to move my body. I was going to stay right there for eternity. Hmm. And that's what I thought. That was in my mind. I'm not moving. Here I am. This is where I want to stay. Nobody can make me move. I'm not moving. And some force, nobody said a word, some force pulled me back up onto my feet and turned me, walked me out of the room, down the stairs, and I wasn't conscious of where I was until I was down the second flight of stairs, almost to the meditation room, and then I woke up. And then, as I walked out, I felt completely free, like I was a flying bird, free.
Free or what?
Well, I understood, I had the understanding in my mind that Mother had unglued the glue that was holding together the personality that had been created by all of whatever. And I was free. I was free. And I was actually traveling. I didn't come to live in the ashram. And so I also thought, oh, I'm free to leave. And the next day I found myself living in Oroville. So it was like that. But then you asked, did I start in the ashram? After 3 years in Oroville, I did the job Mother told me, and the job was finished. And I moved into the ashram.
And you lived there how long?
3.5 years. 3.5 years in Golkhand guest house. And that's the most magic time of my life, because I was all alone with the Mother. She had left by then. But that didn't mean anything. She was just there. It was a really special time.
And after you came back to our world again?
No, afterwards I went to the United States for a while. And then I was told, I mean, after some time I really was clear on inner guidance, when I was having inner guidance. And after being in the States, I was told I should move back to Oroville, not to the ashram. I wasn't too happy about it. Because
so when was that?
I came back in 2001. But it was the same with going to the States. I didn't want to go to the States either. And I was told, you go to the States. And looking back, it was very good for me. It was important because the thing, that, as I understand it, the thing that seems to be important is each person's path and each person's development. And that's where Mother puts us each time. And looking back, I can see that all of the guidance that she gave me and the things I had to do were the best thing that could have happened, although at the time I was pretty unhappy.
So you have the feeling that she's still working with you?
I have absolutely no question about that, except it is not Mother now, it's Sri Aurobindo. That the difference between the two presences is very clear to me, even though at the same time they both say that they are one consciousness and it is one, the same light, and I have experienced that. But still, there's a difference when the particularized consciousness of Sri Aurobindo is guiding. So it's the only thing that keeps me sane.
What?
That reliance on, because the world that I live in is not the normal world that my parents lived in, you know.
What is normal?
What seemed to be normal when I was a kid, the way my parents thought about the world, the things that they did, you know, the story that I bought as a child, you buy a whole life, you know.
But this is just one, each particular system wants to believe that the way they set it up, they're supposed to be normal, because also in Orville, you're supposed to do things normal way, which is the Orville way, no?
Yeah, well, that's my
so
point.
So it's like there's no really this thing normal.
No, there isn't, but I can speak only for myself. I certainly find that I'm imbued with it. It's still functioning in there. And that's a constant work. But Mother makes it very clear that you don't start on this very serious practice unless you're really going to go all the way through. Because it's certainly not easy when everything goes away. You know, and so that's what I mean. They keep me sane.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people have this experience. It's
let's ground ourselves again. You're going for the holidays. You're coming back. You will continue with Savitri and Questions and Answers 56. Besides those lectures you're sharing with us on the radio, what else do you do?
Well, something came up that was quite a surprise that I am having the best time with, I must say. I mean, the radio broadcasts are the favorite job I've ever done in my whole life, and I love them. And even this has come, and it's really nice. I have a friend. She's a Canadian woman, and she was a registered nurse, and she wasn't happy with the fact that her patients didn't seem to get well very, very well. And so she started investigating. How could she find better ways of health care? She wasn't a doctor. She was a registered nurse. And she came upon Sri Aurobindo. And following that, she did all kinds of things. She took courses in healing, like New Age healing kind of things, and that culminated in a PhD on Sri Aurobindo at the California Institute for Integral Studies. And all the while, she did things like she got her master's in nursing and special degrees in nursing. She's very qualified. And she started a series of courses for healthcare practitioners to give. And the techniques are a lot of ancient Indian techniques, meditation techniques, working with the chakras and things. But then, because of her very very strong background in traditional everything, her students, they have clinics in all the hospitals in British Columbia, Canada. Very successful. And some of her students have kept up with their interest in Sri Aurobindo, because their courses are all based on Sri Aurobindo, but no one is told they have to keep that up. So she brought 8 of these ladies, a total of 8, 7 plus herself, to Oroville in February. They formed.
But she's not an Orovillian, right?
No, Ruth is not an Orovillian. She's not an Orovillian at all. She's like, this, what she's doing is very much in demand in the West. She has now been contacted by people like firemen, policemen, those kind of people in the culture, what they call first responders. And a first responder is someone who is the first to respond to an emergency. Paramedics, people, dangerous lives, difficult lives. They're having a high suicide rate. And she's been contacted now to set up courses in these Sri Aurobindo-based techniques.
For them.
For them. It's extraordinary. So she's kept in the West. She's clearly Mother's worker. She's kept in the West.
So what do you do with her?
Well, she became a friend. And she told me she was coming with these 7 ladies. The ones that have remained interested in Mother and Sri Aurobindo formed a group called the Mother's Circle. And they meet once a month very faithfully. They've done it now for years, maybe 8 or 9 years. So they were coming to realize a long-held dream to spend 2 weeks in Oroville. And so they actually made a seeker's pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And she wanted someone to give them some talks. And because I knew her and knew of her work, I said I would do it. And so I arranged a series of four lectures to be given. And I decided to have it professionally recorded, to have it really done professionally. And I knew how busy the radio was during the peak time here. So I went to Srini Yanatra, who does a lot of this stuff. And he suggested that I film it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I don't know. And then the thing has turned into this most marvelous project, because we did it in my house, and we turned my main room into a lecture hall, and we made a story out of it, and we filmed the ladies from the first moment that they get out of the taxi on the first day, with the cows walking by the taxi and coming up the walk to my house, and the talks, and they had a lot of questions. And we had two cameras going. Hmm. So there was one camera on me and one roving camera on the ladies' faces as they reacted to what I was saying. And out of that, I'm putting together what I hope is going to be, in a sense, not a fairy tale, but a magical tale of how these women changed over the 2 weeks that every time we filmed them in the lectures, and everything they wanted to happen happened to them.
Cool.
They got to go to both darshans. They, if they wanted to get something, it practically walked in the door and walked in. So it's going to take months, because I'm being really particular about substituting their faces when there's a beautiful reaction to what I'm saying, and putting it and writing a few voiceovers.
So Srini will also edit it?
I am editing it because I know exactly the feeling that I want, but I don't have the knowledge to use the editing program, the complex editing program. So I go to his studio, and I work with a little girl who is knee-high to a bee in size. She's a tiny, tiny little thing. Little Tamil girl, and she's absolutely wonderful.
Hmm. And she knows how to edit.
She's their editor. She's a crack editor. Hmm. So I bring, every time I bring us a couple of candy bars, and we do it together.
Okay.
You know, I tell her what I want, and then she will tell me if it's good or not good, and I'll ask her for suggestions, and so I haven't finished yet the first one. But I've spent about 18 hours on 1 hour of film.
Takes long, yeah.
Takes long. And then I'll do a couple of more passes. And I'm just hoping that it's another kind of divine gift, and it manifests a beautiful story that touches people.
Cool. So I'll have to wait to see that, and that's fine. Loretta, thank you for today. Enjoy your holidays. And see you.
You're welcome, Miriam. I love coming to the radio. I look forward to working with you soon.